Hello, everyone. My name is Joshua Gilliland, one of the founding attorneys of the Legal Geeks. We are here to discuss the latest episode of Bad Batch Tribe. And with me is Thomas Harper to do so, who's getting ready to go to Batu. Tom, how are you?
I wish I could say fully packed, but that is not the case. Partially packed. And yeah, I'm it's good to have this episode on the doorstep to the trip, because it was a fun sort of connect back to the Clone Wars series.
Did any Clone Wars episodes take place on Kashyyyk?
That is a good question, and I don't think so.
I didn't think so either, or at least I couldn't remember, and maybe I'm just getting old, but I was like, have we seen, besides the Revenge of the Sith, have we seen Kashyyyk since then? And I don't remember.
No, not definitely not in that series that I can recall. In the video game Fallen Order, which would have been around this time period, maybe a little bit after this time period, a few years, but
gotcha. Well, it's a fun episode with a lot of good issues. Now we're introduced to Vanguard Axis droids, who either are a criminal syndicate by themselves, or they are doing all the heavy lifting for organic life forms. There are things that the lead droid says that makes it sound like he's in charge because he can do what he wants. So a lot to unpack there with a droid's rights perspective. But Tom, you identified the issue. Can robots be guilty or criminally liable for their actions? Short topic. What do you think?
Yeah, just a real concise thing to start us off. Yeah, it's a really very Star Wars-esque question, because there, at least yet, there's not much of a parallel in our universe. Star Wars, even the Star Wars universe, we don't know a ton about sort of, I won't call them fully sentient, but we'll say autonomous, like owner-free droids. We do know, obviously, that the Vanguard is one that I want to learn more about, but there's a group called the Droid Gatra, which is a crime syndicate that's comprised of droids that have no owners. You've certainly got bounty hunters like IG-11 and IG-88 that are out there operating Forlom, for that matter, and even Zero from The Mandalorian. But here you have sort of a syndicate playing out. They're clearly well established and into some bad things, as we find out in the episode. But real life law hasn't really caught up to that point yet. Law is reactive, not predictive in many cases. And I think we're seeing play out right now, a longer issue than we have time to discuss here, but with things like ChatGPT and the rapid advancement of AI, I think you're starting to enter the field of some of those questions. Strictly speaking, I mean, you know, the Tesla that is on autopilot and crashes into someone, like, that car is not recognized as a legal entity. If your computer was, automated and doing things and set to infect other computers with a virus, like, there's no legal liability there. So I know we have some legal liability in our world for some weird things, like corporations have legal liability for certain things, but those are all like people driven at the core. We don't have anything like this yet.
Yeah, there's a difference between a product defect case, you know, the Tesla that decides to drive off a bridge or whatever. That could be a product defect action. The issue of AI selling stocks and creating contracts with the purchase of commodities, like, that's recognized. Like, AI can make a sale and thus make a contract. However, that doesn't cross into the machine knew how to make a pyramid scheme. Like, it doesn't, it's not doing insider trading. So there's things that are definitely in the realm of people driven, and thus, you know, the machine knows what input it is given. You know, we don't see AI making a decision about slavery and selling people. Like, that's a very different situation if it decides, well, this is profitable, which then is the horror story of sci-fi movies going back, you know, decades, or at least throughout the 20th century. So it is interesting because these droids do seem to actively be making the decision, we will sell this Wookiee. And they are ready to do it. So there's different level of liability there because there's definite intent. For us, this would turn into a 13th Amendment issue. Then there would be the issue of, is Gungi a person under the law? It doesn't say human, it says a person. And I wouldn't argue with the Wookiee that he wasn't sentient, even if we don't understand what he's saying. So fun stuff there. But we get to why the Bad Batch is doing business with these guys, and it was for forged government documents, which is itself a crime. And you identify that there's conspiracy, but I think it's worth discussing whether the conspiracy to sell forged IDs turns into liability for the Bad Batch for a sudden human trafficking ring that they just walked into.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
So it's a nice, like, subtle linkage back to the first season when the Bad Batch realizes that chain codes are becoming a thing. This is now a sort of a very Star Wars-esque form of ID in the galaxy far, far away. And it's sort of immediately recognized as an important feature, bit of information, if you will, to facilitate travel. So not unlike your passport or your government issued ID. So what's clear is that they understand they're being hired to forge a set of these codes. And we know tech is all too good at that from the first season. But when we talk about conspiracy, what becomes clear here is that these chain codes are being used most likely to facilitate the human trafficking that's going on. Probably one of those chain codes is for Gungi, but effectively laundering people, if you will. And it's a fair question whether that linkage in how those chain codes are going to be used implicates the Bad Batch. The answer is really no. At least they have a solid defense to conspiracy. Doesn't mean they couldn't be accused of it, charged of it, that sort of thing. Because conspiracy really at its heart is an agreement. And to enter into an agreement, you have to do it knowingly, just at a base level. And when you talk about the federal offense of conspiracy, the very first element is that it's got to be a mutual agreement or understanding. Second element is that it's got to be knowingly entered by the defendant. And easy to establish both of those with regard to the chain code, but it's pretty clear that the Bad Batch had no clue what those codes were going to be used for. It's not even clear that they understood what they were going to be used for after they busted Gungi out of there.
Yeah, I would add that there's definitely a conspiracy to sell chain codes. They knew that the Vanguard Axis did smuggling. That doesn't translate to human smuggling. It could be medical supplies. It could be any goods that are now highly regulated that are now profitable for a black market operation. So that doesn't translate to they're selling people. That's a big, big leap. And as far as they, Bad Batch was concerned, it could have been something non-nefarious, because a lot of things are crimes now that weren't beforehand. So not to say that these killer droids don't look like they were on the side of the angels. They seem pretty menacing out of the gate. And it's also clear that the Bad Batch never got paid because the gunfight broke out, and it doesn't look like they left with the chain codes. So the bad guys, many of them did get blown up, did get the goods, and they didn't have to pay for them. And there would be no legal recourse for the bad batch because a court will not enforce anything that's illegal as a matter of public policy. So lots of fun there. But then we find Gunji, who we haven't seen since the Clone Wars. He looks a little older now, raising questions on how Wookiees age as a child to adulthood. And then they slow down. So we're the family dog instead of them. And but yeah, he looked a little older since the last time we saw him make his lightsaber, which, you know, he rightly would want back. So good for him. Now, you identified the big issue, human trafficking. This should not be a stretch for us to say selling people is illegal.
They even say that in there. Yeah. I think it's either Hunter or Tech that says you can't smuggle human beings, which is just slightly related. So even Star Wars is perfectly on the nose with some legal issues.
Yeah, not okay. But, well, it's our culture. Your culture's wrong. You cannot sell human beings.
Well, the response, the response, the droid leader there gives a really chilling reply. He's like, for the right price, I can do whatever I want. And if there's not a better encapsulation of the Star Wars underworld than that quote.
Yeah, very, very bad. it's despicable. And it's the ends justify the means and profit is king. And that's what a libertarian world would be. So no, let's have some government regulation of prohibiting you from selling people. Also, Gunji as Jedi or Padawan would have high value. And it's just evil. Now, Tom, you raised a thoughtful question. For surviving Jedi, could they lawfully invoke self-defense upon the sight of a clone? And we can tell that, you know, our little Wookiee is a little freaked out when he sees clone troopers and not realizing that Omega is also a clone. What are your thoughts on if that's enough for self-defense?
Yeah, so it's speculative here. Gunji ultimately doesn't do anything, although he gives that sort of classic Wookiee snarl the moment he sees Hunter. But Tech points out, he said, he makes a comment that it is reasonable for Gunji as a Jedi to fear them because of clones executing Jedi. It's like a classic Tech observation. And Hunter sort of immediately responds and tries to, like, hey, we didn't do that. We didn't follow the order. We're not all the same. But from the Jedi's perspective, especially from a younger Jedi's perspective, you know, someone who lacks a full understanding of sort of what happened and all the facts and circumstances, I think it's reasonable to, when we talk about self-defense, we talk about, you know, are you in reasonable fear for your safety? And that certainly escalates in terms of the degree of force that you're allowed to use. Are you in fear of great bodily harm or death, that sort of thing? Now, generally speaking, self-defense doesn't necessarily take into account like your religion or this or that, but like I think it is appropriate to step into the shoes of Gunji as a Jedi Padawan here and say he is reasonable for that. The clones certainly recognize it. They're an entity that probably attempted to kill him. I would wager he was involved in a situation like Grogu or some of the other Padawans, Cal Kestis, where they witness this sort of thing and maybe escape barely with their lives. And they're in some sort of hiding and fleeing, and sort of the person that they identify with this threat is not an Imperial stormtrooper. It's not the Emperor or anything else. It is a clone trooper that tried to kill them. And in this situation, it's a nice setup because they're all the same person. It is the exact same person. And at least in Gunji's mind or in his experience, they all acted the same, which is to try to kill him.
Yeah, the analysis can include the fact of probably everyone that he knew that he was with died at the hands of a clone. So there's a definite PTSD factor that he probably had a master that died saving him, you know, kind of like Kanan, that, you know, he lost everyone. We don't see any of his other, you know, youngling friends on the run. You know, they probably met ugly demises as well. And he's rightfully traumatized by the experience. So seeing a bunch of stormtroopers show up, you know, faceless individuals, has to be triggering. And they all have very similar voices, if not the same voice. So there's a, you know, it's understandable he would be afraid. Does that, I mean, it kind of turns into like a weird profiling issue then, that doesn't mean all clones are bad, but the fact that they're clones and they did a mass murder, it's a very unique facts situation. You know, you can't do the, I'm afraid of, you know, Italian looking people because of the mob. It's like, oh, that's not everyone who's Italian is a mobster. Like that's profiling. But every clone who participated in Order 66 is just in a different category. I don't know if that could make reasonable fear. I mean, it could be reasonable for that Wookiee to feel afraid when he sees armed clones coming his way. Lot to unpack. So Gunji's liberated. And another way to look at liberation is theft. And you raised the point, if Clone Force 99 is guilty of theft for freeing Gunji, I'm going to go with no, based upon the idea that people cannot be sold. So people aren't property. They saved him. Anything to add to that?
Well, the lightsaber might be another. I thought this is an interesting concept because it sort of challenges common sense where, you know, can you steal a piece of property that's been stolen? So we'll set aside Gunji because people even in this galaxy can't be property lawfully. But stuff, so we'll take Gunji's really cool lightsaber made out of Rosher wood, wood from the giant trees on Kashyyyk. That's a piece of property. Let's treat that as property. It's been unlawfully obtained by this criminal syndicate, the Vanguard Axis. And under the law, you can actually steal stolen property. So the idea of theft is that the elements of that crime are sort of independent, irrespective of the status of that piece of property. So the fact that I might have, or the Vanguard Axis may have stolen or illicitly come into the control of this lightsaber really doesn't matter for the purposes of commission of larceny or just, you know, theft in general. So if you meet the elements, so you're taking it, you have an intent to deprive the owner permanently of it, et cetera, then that's theft regardless of whether it's stolen. So just an interesting wrinkle in the law there.
Yeah, and I would ask, it's Gunji taking back his property.
Well, that's true. So you got to maneuver this one to...
I mean, like, and they were all surprised to see a Wookiee with a lightsaber. They did not see that one coming. I'm not sure if Omega's seen a lightsaber in action yet, because her reaction was, whoa, I did... Surprise!
That's cooler than my bow.
Yeah, well, I understand why he was looking through that drawer trying to find something in a trunk so he could find his lightsaber.
Mm-hmm.
So we then get into the issue of taking Gunji home, who doesn't remember home other than he knows the planet that he's from, which is got to stink. I'm like, this highlights one of the issues with younglings being taken at, you know, from, you know, infancy, being to be raised by Jedi, but not getting into all that problem, he has no idea what village he's from. You know, he probably doesn't even know what his last name is. It's a weird, weird situation. But you raise the issue of a duty to return him to his family. Why don't you expound upon that?
Yeah, so Gunji, we presume, is still a Padawan. So we're, just for purposes of this analysis, we'll treat him as under 18. And we've dealt with this issue before in a couple contexts, Grogu and Omega. But the business of potentially acting in loco parentis, so the law recognizes a status where you effectively act as someone's parents because of the role that you've assumed. Now, Gunji's older. He's not Grogu. He's certainly older than Omega, so he doesn't have the same level of need. But I think they intuitively recognize that they're not fit to care for him. They know where he's from. He wants to go home, back to Kashyyyk, and they sort of inherently recognize that sort of duty. And you know, the concept under the law, if you qualify, if that sort of status is triggered, you have to act as a parent would. You have to look after that child, even though it may not be yours, in a way that is in the child's best interest. You're attending to their needs, et cetera. So in this case, I think they meet that duty. I don't know that they trip the legal requirement for being in loco parentis. I think you would need some more screen time for that. But they do the right thing here.
Yeah, and they do it quickly. There's no debate about, well, let's go.
Yeah. Let's do you want to come on some raids with us?
No, there was nothing like that. It was, we're going to take the kid home, which is nice to see. There was no like, well, let's go back to Sid. It was like, no, we're going to do a pit stop and take him back home because they're loyal to Wookiees. Because let's face it, having a Wookiee as your wingman would be pretty cool. Would be pretty cool. So yeah, there's that loyalty there. You did raise the issue. Is there a duty to rescue him in the first place? No, it was just the right thing to do, mm-hmm. which is why Omega is a good character. And all the others were like, yeah, game on. Like they do the right thing. Let's discuss Transdotians as mercenaries. It's yes. really hard to like them. Like,
especially if you're a Wookiee, it's very hard to like Transdotians.
Yeah, the quote about whoever gets the Jedi gets 100 Wookiee pelts.
Yeah, the fact that they're using your literal skin and fur as currency. This is like one of my favorite sort of clash points in the Star Wars universe. There's some great Clone Wars episodes featuring this sort of thing. But we have Commander Venomor, the leader of the Transdotians, and they're working alongside clones. We see that they're at first we see them just operating old AAT armored assault tanks, the old droid army tanks, but it's clear they're with a clone patrol and they've got some sort of military purpose there on Kashyyyk. Under international humanitarian law, law of war, there's a class of or a status for mercenaries. So those would be guns for hire. It's a really restrictive status. You have to meet a lot of legal wickets, six pretty tight factors or tightly controlled factors to get that status. Or the law recognizes a slightly different twist on it, which are private military security companies, and they're treated differently. A private military security company might be, hired contractors, think like Blackwater guarding a base in Iraq in the early days of that war or something like that. And the difference is primarily that those private security contractors are treated, they're civilians under IHL. They could be prosecuted for violations and whatnot. So without a little more facts, it's difficult to classify them as mercenaries. We don't know their mission, but they seem to be carrying out a combat function on behalf of the Empire there. I think you could equally say that they're providing security for the clones, whatever residual Imperial force is there. You know, Wookiees are a continuing threat to, given the sort of change in ownership of the Republic. But in any case, doing some of the things that they're doing, violating IHL, targeting civilians, burning down civilian property, that sort of thing. In either case, mercenary or private contractor, you are liable for violations of the law of war and violations of the law. You don't have combatant immunity like you would if you were a soldier, if you were a clone, quite frankly.
And it looks like they're targeting monuments, something that's a no-no. The former president, when he threatened to target cultural sites, it's like, we don't do that.
There's an entire Hague Convention about that.
Yeah, like this is a giant no-no. And like they're doing it openly with, look, we found more carvings, open fire. So very, very bad Transdosians doing evil things. And they seem very war criminally. I'm curious, did the Empire, like, how far does Order 66 go? So it's one thing to take out Jedi. Does that include long-term allies as well? So are they perhaps afraid clones would not open fire on Wookiees? And I don't know the answer to that, but maybe headcanon that it could explain why you'd be using Transdosians on Kashyyyk instead of having clone troopers go out there, because maybe they would feel conflict about opening fire on Wookiees.
Yeah, and I don't know. We do know that to some extent Wookiees are enslaved. We don't know whether any of that's going on. Bad Batch only speculates that the Empire might have an outpost on Kashyyyk, but really they don't even know the status of the planet. We don't see a large scale operation going on yet on the planet. We get a very narrow peek into what's happening on the planet, but it's clear, you know, and eventually the Wookiees become a pretty active insurgent force against the Empire. And so this is the tip of that particular iceberg.
Okay, it brings back memories of the first episode of Rebels, which sees Wookiees being, you know, exploited and enslaved, mm-hmm. and the Empire has they're there. So, there's bad things are afoot. Finally, we get into the environmental destruction of Kashyyyk, and why don't you walk us through the law of war issues with that?
Yeah, so maybe surprisingly, unsurprisingly, the environment, much like other, you know, some protected people and protected property, is there's safeguards under IHL, under the law of war for the environment. Generally speaking, environmental destruction, needless destruction of the environment, is prohibited under IHL, and the only exception to that. That's destruction of the natural environment. So the exception to that that's built in there is that it's got to be justified by imperative military necessity. So here, I would say a classic example of that escape hatch would be when they're actively ambushed by the clones and by Gungi. You see use of the flamethrowers and whatnot. There, I think you could probably make an argument that they weren't needed to cause some destruction in order to fight back and defend themselves. You also can't have destruction or sort of wrongful collection of the natural environment as part of pillaging. So pillaging, we classically think about in, you know, probably like Viking terms, right? You're like raiding and taking things that aren't yours. Well, that includes parts of the natural environment, and pillage can include destruction of portions of the natural environment to deny that wrongfully to the people that live there. Here, there's this interesting intersection on Kashyyyk because the Wookiees are intertwined inextricably with the environment. They mention, I think through Yana, the sort of elder Wookiee, that the Wookiees believe that the trees quite literally own the planet. They're just guests there, right? They have this deep connection, almost like Avatar-esque to the natural environment there. So there's this interesting intersection between the environmental protections, but also the cultural property protections, because they have this deep reverence for individual trees there. All the way up to the, I think, what is it called? The Tree of Life, like the central tree that forms sort of a basis for Wookiee faith and whatnot. We see that in Jedi Fallen Order. So the environment is protected here, and the kind of stuff that they're doing generally on that planet, torching stuff, is outlawed. It is interesting. This is the first time I've ever seen like fire control done in Star Wars, other than using a fire extinguisher, but use of shovels to help prevent the spreading of fire. I thought that was pretty cool to see on screen.
Yeah. And again, as a Californian, yes, yes. There's lots of digging when people are fighting forest fires. So good job there. It's the salt the earth mindset of we will make it so the land can never be used again, and kill all the children so that way no one will seek revenge. The very, very dark, cruel mindset of war that's biblical in approach. So that's all the big legal issues. I really enjoyed this episode. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I really did. It called back to a really fun arc in the Clone Wars. Gungi was a cool character to see and had a really unique path in the episodes that he showed up in. I wonder what happened to his fellow Padawan comrades that we got to know. Folks like Petro and the others. It was a neat tie back. This is where like a connected universe really works well, when you have this sort of tissue connecting things.
That, and since Wookiees can live several hundred years, you know, he could pop up some other time,
yes,
some other place, live action or not. So there's all kinds of opportunities for, again, Chewbacca's in his 200s. The elder leader had to be what, 300s to 400s? Like, it's they're not as long lived as Yoda, but they're up there. So like, yeah. Always fun to see a Wookiee. And our heroes morally make all the right choices. So that's the other refreshing issue, that presented right or wrong, they choose to do the right thing. So with that, everyone, thanks for tuning in. We hope everyone is staying safe and staying healthy. Wherever you listen, please leave us a review, whether it's iTunes or one of the other podcast apps that you enjoy us on. And until next time, stay geeky.